had seen the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me. But I've never caught a glimpse how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change it.
Don't wanna be a richer man. But never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes. Don't tell them to grow up out of it.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the January 11th, 2007 edition. Stay tuned, or if you're not, march to the town clock or soodle over to the town clock and tell Bush and Cheney where to get off. It's an anti-war protest, folks, downtown. Coming up, special guest Kate Horner of Santa Cruzans for Sensible Marijuana Policy, Tim Rinker, and the mystery Sam, who may or may not explain who he is. Stay with us.
Cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that. On the eve of destruction again, and he's got the knack. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. He come into town with a chip on his shoulder. His cowboy boots made him feel tall. He said, by proclamation, now there's a new order, and I am the fiercest leader of all. He wore a pair of six shooters, a Bowie knife and a rifle, and a Derringer stashed in his boot. Said, y'all drop your weapons, I'm here to disarm you. Don't give me a reason to shoot. Everyone protested, they all turned against him. Said, just who do you think you are? He said, many are good, but many are evil, and I am the Avatar. They all drew and fired, he yelled, Condoleezza, if you're with me, then blast him to hell. She She came riding side saddle, shouting out orders and twirling two pistols remarkably well. When it was over, there's nothing left standing, nothing moving, nothing to say. They drove the prisoners east to the boats for their hanging from the gallows overlooking Guantanamo Bay. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In old America, you'd never get away with that. With an ego the size of Texas and his brand on Iraq, he's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat.
And that was Cowboy President from the album Election Day USA by the singer A.J. McGee. We actually went out with him on Sunday. This is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, the name of the show you're listening to. My name is Robert Norse, and the show airs twice a week. This is the short version, but if you want more of the same and twice as long, you can tune in on Sunday mornings at 9:30. Actually, I'll be coming in earlier, 8:30, and you can catch the show. A quick announcement at the town clock tonight. There is a anti-war protest against the latest madness of the Führer, who is moving forward with 20,000 more troops, as you may remember, those of you who had the pleasure of watching his speech last night, which I didn't, thank goodness. So you might want to check that out at the town clock. I'm hoping to get some kind of a report from the town clock, but I'm not hoping too hard because somebody has a cell phone at the town clock. They may call Free Radio, particularly if people decide to march to Sam Farr's office, break in, and demand he support an end to the, not just to the surge, but to the war. Wouldn't that be an interesting thing? But, well, that's about as likely as, I don't know, the city council appointing some decent people to the Measure K Commission, which we're still waiting to see form. Anyway, that's an option for you. Also, tomorrow night, I think it's tomorrow night, January 12th, Battle of Algiers will be playing at the Gorilla Drive-In, which I believe is, because of the freezing weather, being held at the Bike Church. But I better check the public announcements to be sure that I know what I'm talking about. And that may take some time to find in this particular version. So, perhaps. Thank you. Yeah, there is. Anyway, yeah, the Bike Church is, in fact, at 703 South Pacific downtown. And the time of the Battle of Algiers, which is a great film. I saw it years ago. It's a 1966 documentary. Shows Algerian people's struggle to liberate themselves from France, sort of like the Iraqi people's struggle to liberate themselves from, well, need I go any further? Sorry?
It's not a documentary.
No, it's a combo.
Battle of Algiers.
It's a little documentary. It's got some documentary footage, and it also has actors, and it combines newsreel footage with stage sequences, according to this, featuring amateur and professional actors. In other words, it's commie propaganda, folks. So check it out.
Have you seen it, Robert?
Yes. I certainly have. That's the famous cry from the film, the which was the cry of some of the Algerian freedom fighters who were tortured and also in turn did some torturing, as I understand it. Torture is becoming all the rage these days. Anyway, if you want to call to the show because you're annoyed or perhaps bored or maybe enraged, who knows, you can give us a call at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. If you want to hear the show after it's gone through its paces because you think you want to do it again or check something out that we said, it's going to be archived at huff.santacruz.org in a couple of days. So check that website. And if you want to catch me off the air and perhaps be a guest on this show or maybe just inveigh at me for whatever I've not done or done, as the case may be, The phone number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. However, more to the point, in the studio with me, after many emails and a number of phone calls, I have actually three guests, two of whom I'm going to introduce right now. Token Tim Rinker, as I call him, a man about marijuana, and a paid agent of the marijuana conspiracy, Kate Horner of the Santa Cruzans for a Sensible Marijuana Policy. Actually, you're both from Santa Cruzans for a Sensible Marijuana Policy.
Hello, Robert.
While people were focusing on starving out the workers and defeating Measure G, somehow Measure K just slipped by, right? That's sort of what happened.
Now, when workers and the bosses like to smoke marijuana.
Yeah, they like to smoke marijuana, yeah. And I do think, though, that if Measure G had not been on the ballot, police forces and conservative forces would put a lot of energy into showing just how evil and how disingenuous all you Santa Cruzans for sensible marijuana policy are.
Who would have been against this?
Well, you saw, I guess, what was it, Vice Deputy Chief Cipone wrote the opposing ballot measure or the opposing ballot argument, you may remember,
uh-huh. Yeah.
Kate or Tim.
I liked it, actually. I think it helped us.
Really?
Well, yeah. I mean, you go ahead and get, like, all the authority figures, you know, to tell you can't smoke marijuana. The cop, the high school teacher.
Ed Porter, yes.
Yeah,
council member.
The city
Ed
council
Porter.
Person. The drug rehab person, great, you know. All the authority figures telling you, again, the lies that pot is bad for you. I think it worked.
Well, it's interesting. Well. The main argument that was used, that was the most kind of cagey argument, was the whole question of whether marijuana is good or bad is completely separate from whether it should be made the lowest priority locally. This really disadvantages our police force, stresses out our courts, imperils our youth, and also probably causes hair to grow on our palms. But, I mean...
voters knew better.
Let me introduce the real star of the show, Kate. Kate Horner. Hi, Kate. Say hello.
Hi.
Excuse me?
Thanks for having me. Excited.
Sure. Let me put this to the side.
Lovely.
And you've been working with the Santa Cruzans for Sensible Marijuana Policy for how long?
Just since last August, not very long.
And is this a job for you? Is this a quest for you? Is this sort of something you, what do you normally do when you're not doing political work of this kind? Or is that, in fact, your work?
Well, I've done a lot of political work, and I think that this is one issue that fits in amongst many of how do we make more sensible policy for a larger number of people. This is something that affects everyone in Santa Cruz in terms of how we set policies in our criminal justice system at large. And that affects everyone in terms of keeping everyone safe. And that also means who are we putting in jail, and is that an appropriate measure to take for a lot of these things, not only keeping people safe at the neighborhood level. So I was just going to say that's a larger concern of mine, and this was an excellent opportunity to advance some meaningful reform.
What were you doing before this? Were you a skier, nuclear physicist? Bored housewife.
I've done a lot of different things, a Jill of all trades. I'm new to Santa Cruz. My partner's a graduate student, so I've only been in Santa Cruz a little less than a year.
Well. We've talked a bit on the air. I, of course, denounced poor Tim and the Santa Cruzans for Sensible Marijuana Policy for not being radical enough for my tastes and for not, you know, confronting the Santa Cruz City Council and demanding they take that they pass this measure as, I guess, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors passed
that measure. That wouldn't be radical. It would just be annoying.
No, it would be great.
It wouldn't change anything.
No, I think you would mobilize the community. When people see them acting like a bunch of idiots, they might not even reelect Rotkin and Matthews, as they did. But instead we did this low-profile...
Don't blame that on us.
What's that?
Don't blame them on us.
Well, I know you guys had a strategy, and you have a strategy in a number of cities, Santa Monica, Santa Barbara, and Santa Cruz, and it's not necessarily a bad one. Preparing the way for the 2008 hopeful state initiative that will actually do something, that is actually put into state law, and then we don't want to spend our time fighting the feds. Right now, however, we're still dealing with the benighted, not just the, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, we're dealing with Bob Lee, Sheriff Robbins, and the Board of Supervisors. So, and not just on recreational marijuana, but on medical marijuana. So I feel that the more high profile you make this issue and mobilize people around it, the better it is, and the more pause you give to the clowns who are running around with badges and guns. Now, that's obviously not, that wasn't the opinion of the Santa Cruzans for Sensible Marijuana Policy.
Well, how much more high profile do you want? I mean, we did get front page coverage, and we are working towards a, hopefully, with MPP.
Protests at the jail about initiative. Drug war prisoners who are currently being held there. Support, denouncing the DA for current marijuana prosecutions. No, you guys did a very low-key kind of program. And let's give credit to where it's due. You won. And that could be a very good first step. But it's not going to help the people in jail in the next couple of years, I don't think.
Well, it did in Seattle.
Yeah, it did in Seattle, and let me also say that there's legitimacy to the point that there are many different ways to organize and many different ways to affect change. And those direct action techniques that you're talking about, you know, rallies in front of the jail, those are legitimate, and they work, and in terms of media profile, they're important that there is that groundswell of support. But this is another avenue, and to say that this is not a legitimate avenue or a less than legitimate avenue to affect change, I think... is somewhat disingenuous because it's
pretty straightforward, actually.
Well, I mean, I think that you have to recognize that there, across the country, this is happening, that there are local communities, bigger cities, smaller communities, there's, you know, Nevada and Colorado, of people that are trying to affect change in marijuana policy. It's not going to happen in one place. It's not going to be, you know, 2 million people marching on Washington and saying, dismantle the drug czar office. That's not how it's going to happen.
We do hope that hundreds of thousands will march on January 27th and say end the war effort.
Right.
Just a quick aside.
Yes.
10 cities, by the way.
10 cities.
This last election.
Good idea.
I just don't think that you can say that marching on Washington is the only legitimate way to get where you need to be.
I don't think I'm saying that, but I'm not really interested in criticizing you except taking the occasional pot shot, so to speak. You know, I went through this with Andrea Tischler, who was, after having milked the upper middle class medical marijuana users, is now retired to Hawaii after doing some good work, I might add, as well. So I'm not, but the fact of the matter is, you know, you got a large chunk of money which you used for surveying, and then you did, you know, and then you got this thing on the ballot, and sort of as almost a no-brainer, it passed, and it passed in numerous cities. But it might not have been a no-brainer, as I suggested at the beginning of the show, because, as I said, the merchants had to split their time, you know, but as to what to do, and they couldn't really go after all the... There were two...
There's a lot of merchants downtown who are making money off of marijuana.
So... There are a lot of marijuana dealers who are making money off marijuana who don't want to see it legalized. So what? You know, I mean, what's the point?
All the merchants weren't going to necessarily mobilize against it. We won largely because we have the people's support here, and it's not just one certain class.
I didn't hear of any merchants coming out for your proposition.
Classes.
I heard of no profile. The downtown association.
Bookshop, yeah. Santa Cruz.
Yeah, he had to do so to protect his rep while he was planning, of course, to subvert the rights of poor and homeless people. With the other hand, I mean, that's the problem with people like the Coonerties, Ryan, the city council.
Hey,
I'm no defender of Neil Coonerty. Now, of course, Mr. Politico.
I'll defend him on this issue.
Right.
I know he's no friend of the homeless. And,
well, we'll
although,
see.
Although
you
in
know,
terms
you know,
of the bathrooms
I think
downtown,
there's, I think there's
I'll
a,
give him that
there's
credit,
a perfectly,
too.
No, private bathrooms in one building means nothing if you're closing down bathrooms all over the city, which is what the city council has done. And he did nothing to open up bathrooms in Santa Cruz when he was on the city council that I'm aware of. And he was on there for 4 years. So, but the fact of the matter is Coonerty is on the board of supervisors now. And on the board of supervisors, he has the option to demand that the sheriff and the DA follow state law around medical marijuana. That is to say that they not go after people who supply and cultivate and sell marijuana, even if those people aren't direct caregivers in the sense of, you know, being by the bedside of the marijuana patient, even if they are selling from a store as Lisa Molyneux is in Greenway. What we have, however, is, with not a word from you people during the campaign, I didn't hear a peep from this campaign about what's going on. People are being prosecuted in this city for transportation and sale of marijuana by the DA. I did hear, however, and I was impressed by the fact that you gathered stats to try to challenge public versus private use of marijuana and try to use police stats there to show the extent of the prosecutions in the city, which I think is that kind of figure. Getting those kinds of figures, I think, was very important, and I appreciate your doing that. Did you have something?
I was also just going to add that our measure was a little bit more aggressive than some of the other measures, which
really?
I think that you might appreciate in the sense that we, a lot of the other measures only went after private use, and they specified a quantity, and we didn't, our measure didn't do that because we felt that we had the support in the community to be a little bit more aggressive. We've also added in sections to the text of the initiative that disallow the Santa Cruz Police Department from accepting funds and deputizing people to work in the multi-agency task force that can be so destructive in terms of some of the county issues that you're talking about.
Now, was this done in Santa Monica and Santa Barbara, or is that different from those two cities?
It's a little different than those two cities.
Are you familiar? I'm not. Maybe you are. Maybe you're not either, because I know we got this program going on short notice this time. But do you know if they, in fact, are also requiring disassociation of the police agencies, their local police agencies, from other...
That clause I'm not sure about. Mm-hmm. I do know that theirs are private personal use intended, and ours is a little bit broader.
And was that clause a part of the Seattle and Oakland initiatives, which Tim mentioned a moment ago, that in Seattle he claims that I don't think anybody was... I'm not aware of anybody released from jail in Seattle. Maybe they stopped prosecuting people, or they
number of arrests.
Number of arrests dropped in Seattle.
75%.
Right. Now,
which is good. Yeah.
What about the issue of federal collusion, taking money? Was that a part of the Seattle?
I think it's part of Oakland's.
It's not a part of Seattle's.
Now, I actually played on the air. You had some great experts that came to city council to speak on behalf of this measure, though again, not to demand that city council pass it, which to me would be the most obvious and sensible and direct local approach, though I also like the idea of having a broad community vote as well. But having it done immediately by the city council, I think would have sent a message, first of all, 8 months earlier, and would have, you know, and then you could have also put it on the ballot as well. It would have been, you know, the kind of thing that I would like to see.
Well, I don't think we would have gotten the support. I mean, look at Rotkin, who should have been our number one supporter. I mean, he's been a marijuana supporter over the years.
Right. You would have exposed
his
hypocrisy. You would have exposed his hypocrisy. And I think made it less likely that we'd have a hypocrite like that on the council. And he's going to be one of the people that's appointing your commission. Why don't we talk a little bit about that commission? Kate, tell us about the commission that's due to be appointed by mid-February.
Well, each city council member will appoint someone to sit on the oversight committee, and that oversight committee will be charged with implementing the measure swiftly and correctly. So it'll be a 7-person committee. They'll also work with the police to establish that additional reporting form that they'll use if any additional marijuana reports are made. And that committee will also hear any grievances from the community should anyone feel like they have been wrongly targeted.
Why am I not reassured that this at a city council appointed committee will actually take some meaningful steps to challenge a corrupt police department? I mean, my concern is that...
Well, it won't be the city council that's challenging it.
It'll be the
oversight committee.
Their appointees will be challenging.
This is true. But we do have support on the council from some people, which is hopeful.
Two or three.
Yeah. And
the majority will be appointed by members either neutral or hostile to this measure, right?
That's true. That's something that we have to be concerned about.
It doesn't have to be the oversight committee either. It can be any citizen who feels like the law isn't being enacted, I believe. It's a matter of filing a writ of mandate with the court,
which is difficult to do and costly. Do you have financing for people who want to challenge this? I mean, I know you got a substantial chunk of change from, what's the guy's name?
The Marijuana Policy Project is who we got the grant from, and they receive a significant amount of funding from Peter Lewis in addition to their membership base and many other funders.
I remember Shanna Banana McCord, the Sentinel writer, going after Mr. Lewis with an axe on the
right.
front page.
Which is the, She's very supportive of our issue.
Is she really? She's the most charming woman, I must say. Actually, I kind of like her personally, but her news reporting, I think, leaves something to be desired. Responsibilities of the committee shall include ensuring timely implementation of this chapter with the cooperation of the Santa Cruz Police Department excuse me, and other law enforcement agencies in providing needed data. B, receiving any grievances from individuals who believe they were subjected to law enforcement activity contrary to the lowest law enforcement priority order or a priority policy. C, designing a supplemental report form for Santa Cruz law enforcement officers to use to report all adult marijuana arrests, citations, and property seizures, and all instances of officers assisting in state or federal arrests, citations, and property seizures for any adult marijuana offenses in the city of Santa Cruz. The report shall be designed with the goal of allowing the committee to ascertain whether the lowest law enforcement priority policy was followed. I mean, I have a little problem here. I see no problem with issuing supplemental reports, but designing a supplemental report form, I mean, this is something you do. Just go up to Oakland, go up to Seattle, I don't know, go to anybody who, and you present them with the form. Maybe you even include it on the ballot. Why would you have a committee, which is largely going to be hostile to this or neutral or not terribly interested in defending the police department, design the form? Why not present them with the form?
We didn't want to give them anything to target. You know, we didn't want to have them come up and say, oh, this, look at this. This is going to be too much bureaucracy for us. If it's going to be too much bureaucracy, let them figure out how they're going to get the information. All we want to do is get the information. So, and we didn't really want to piss off the police. We want to make their job easier, truthfully. So,
you somehow
it was a consideration in committee, and we left it up to them.
Do you actually feel you have support in the police department for this policy?
I think we have it in some areas. Yeah.
And you say this because?
Well, you know, I've met police officers who are supportive of the marijuana issue. I've had a CHP officer tell me that he would rather deal with 100 people on pot than one person on alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can imagine.
And I've also met.
We're talking about the
met a woman who out at a local dispensary who was married to a police officer.
I don't want to hear these little anecdotes about how individual police officers on some occasions are supportive or sane on this issue.
They didn't come out against our issue as the police officers union. They remained neutral.
But high-ranking police officials did.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, you got to expect some police officers to be against.
You know, I've seen how the police department has destroyed the Citizens Police Review Board in this town, which actually was beginning to start making some incremental moves toward dealing with racial profiling and selective enforcement. Now, the question to me is, that was under a much more liberal city council 4 years ago in 2003. Now we have a city council that is so far to the right that, you know, Fitzmaurice looks wonderful, which I could never have imagined myself thinking, but there we are. And Porter looks like a flaming liberal, although, of course, on the marijuana issue, he isn't. And on every other issue, pretty much, he isn't either. But he looks liberal compared to the majority of the council. These are the people who are going to appoint this commission who will then spend their time hammering out a form. You know, what's going to stop them from spending 2 years hammering out a form?
I think there's some deadlines built in.
Let's take a look. Continuing with the, I'm reading from Measure K.
I know they're at least with the formation of the committee.
The deadline is they have to appoint it within 100 days. That's
yeah,
there all.
A lesson.
There's no deadline.
Well, there's a
lesson
from Oakland.
No, that's nice. There's no deadline on what they have to do, is there, Tim? They can sit around twiddling their thumbs all year, can't they?
You know, we can look at every aspect of all reform issues and say, this isn't good enough. This isn't good enough. This could take 10 years. And you're right. There are possibilities for pitfalls, and there are possibilities for police members to not comply with the issue and not comply with the ordinance. But the fact of the matter is that we have huge support in the community for this. It passed by 64% of the vote. And I think that we're going to proceed with a good faith effort that people are going to move forward with this and deal with these issues as they come up. And I don't think that it's necessarily helpful to yes, the police department have in some areas have not been as supportive in certain areas as we hope that they could be. And in this issue, we're going to take them at their word and say that we can try and move forward on this with a new policy that's been implemented by the voters.
They've given you their word they're going to move forward? I haven't heard any such thing. I mean,
the fact of the matter is that it's totally within the mandate of the community to specify a priority and of enforcement. And I think that we're hopeful that they will recognize the mandate that has been given by the community and move forward appropriately.
We have a caller calling in. You're on the air with Kate Horner, Tim Rinker, and, of course, your host, Robert Norris, plus the mystery Sam, who may come into the picture later. Hi there, caller.
Yes, I'm just calling about a particular... you mentioned that there's a protest at the town clock, but I don't know what time you said it would be.
You know, it actually started at 6, is what I was told.
Oh, okay.
And so they may still be going there. We may be talking about 3 elderly women with peace signs or 100 raging youths. I don't know.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
Yes.
You're doing a very good job, Robert.
Hey, thank you.
And thank you for the time.
And give me a report from the clock if you actually get down there.
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye. In the studio with Kate, Tim, and Sam. What I'm looking for is a way to put maximum pressure on the police department and the city council and mobilize the community through what you've done and through what else can be done this year. And
give money to MPP and support a statewide
give
initiative.
Give money to MPP. Well, I've got no problem with initiatives at a state level. I think they're a good thing, and I think if they succeed, they're great.
And they've also, you know, part of the thing with donating to MPP is last year they had, like, a matching fund. I don't know if it was from Peter Lewis or some other anonymous donor, but they had a matching funds for $3.5 million. And they have, I think it's closer to $2.something million this year, because it's a non-election year. And as close to that figure that they could raise from other people, they had a matching fund from.
You know, I'm located in Santa Cruz, and giving money to MPP, which has never raised a dime to help anybody in jail in Santa Cruz on marijuana issues that I'm aware of, mm-hmm. is one way of spending your money. And I'm not necessarily.
But what I'm saying,
you know,
what
I'm
saying
is bad.
Is the you know, to it, a state the way you would help the local people the most is pass it on a statewide level, just legalize it.
And of course, declare an amnesty for those who have been hurt by it, and restitution in that situation too. Is it what you would want ideally out of this?
Ideally, yes, but that would have to be a secondary issue, because that's I think as one of the issues that's crippled the Jack Harer's hemp initiatives over the years.
The author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the restitution. Has been part of those initiatives over the years, and I think that I think it lessens the support.
I understand,
but I do think it should be a secondary.
You're trying to press on with, you know, who will fault you for that? Nobody. But the point is. Somebody, obviously. They're going to be nobody, I think, who has her head screwed on straight is going to say, you know, frankly, because I think that those who the anti-marijuana lobby consists of pharmaceuticals, police departments, and Christian
teachers.
Fanatics. I don't know. I mean, it's hard
certain
to say.
High school teachers,
I don't know.
I
and
say.
Certain high school teachers, yes.
Not all.
The
high
fact
school
is, however, that we have a situation in the local community which needs to be addressed. And simply sitting around waiting for the state cavalry to come in or kicking money into a large initiative campaign, which I think isn't bad, and even supporting it, isn't going to do anything for us in the next two years.
That's absolutely not true.
Okay, go ahead.
Every single person can go to their assembly member and say, this is absolutely essential, John Laird, that you move forward on marijuana policy reform. I mean, that's how these things work. We have representatives at the state level, and they're very receptive to people coming in.
Let's talk about that. What has been the history of marijuana reform in the last 30 years at the state level in a legislature largely dominated by those fun Democrats that keep getting reelected all the time? Tell me what kind of reforms they've made.
Last year, unfortunately, Schwarzenegger vetoed the hemp bill. But
that's not a marijuana reform. That has to do with the use of hemp for industrial use, right?
Yeah, but I'm
hemp for victory, so to speak.
Any progression in any area of marijuana reform, in my opinion, is.
I'm asking
is
you
a
question.
Forward.
I'm getting dodges.
No, these are dodges.
I want to know in the last 30 years, Tim. Give me three or four examples of marijuana reform that's happened. Come on, let's hear it.
Prop 215.
that didn't come from the legislature. That came from the people.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where it always comes from.
Yeah, where do you think is? I mean, yeah, where else is it going
to
come from?
We're saying people politicians? Talk to your assembly members. Get
talk
involved.
To your
what
assembly
are you asking,
members.
Robert?
No, I'm
what's
saying,
the question?
No. You heard my question.
Say
your confidence in all these
it's
legislators.
Short-term memory thing.
People have been doing. You're saying you have. Well, have a puff of this if you feel better. It's been. In the mid 70s, there was some reform. And that reform was that there was, you know, marijuana was somewhat decriminalized.
Uh-huh.
Then things came to a roaring halt. And there's an interesting book called Reefer Madness, uh-huh. that I think talks about this very well. And I read this on the air. You read
okay.
Reefer Madness?
Well, actually, things have.
And wait a minute. I don't want to hear, you know, pains of praise about what might happen in the future, although I'm interested in that. Mm-hmm. I want to know what happened in the. What has the legislature done in the last 20 years that involves marijuana reform?
Why are you so reluctant to recognize Prop 215 as a major victory?
It is a major victory.
Okay, so there we go.
That's not the legislators. That's the people voting an initiative. And that is
well,
the
why
one
are you,
victory
then why are you,
point to.
Then
take
why
that
are
back.
You expecting change from the legislature? I mean, I would agree with you that the
well,
legislature
Kate
isn't
has
really...
just said, talk to John Laird. He will make some great changes for us.
We
so
have,
I want to know
okay.
what wonderful changes John is going to make.
Vasconcelos,
what does he support?
A lot of support.
Okay, let's hear true. let's hear about what's on the docket in the legislature.
The state legislature actually did pass medical marijuana initiatives three or four times at the state level before Prop 215 came about. And Pete Wilson, governor, vetoed it, like, I think three or four times. So actually, to their credit, the state legislature did support medical marijuana and go forward with reform. It was the governor that ultimately stopped it. And that's what happened last year as well. The legislature passed the industrial hemp bill. And our governor, who's puffed himself, you know, and I think actually he's on our side and he would like to pass it because that's what he, at least his excuse was that it wasn't consistent with federal law. So he doesn't want to. Pass, you know, piss off the feds.
And in fact, looking at my little Google here, on October 16th, 1995, 11 years ago, Governor Pete Wilson vetoed AB 1529 by Vasconcelos, as you said, which allowed for the prescribed use, medical use of marijuana. So it did pass the legislature at that point, the third consecutive time that Wilson has vetoed a medical marijuana proposal, again, proving that you're not an entire liar or dullard, Tim, which I commend you for
being. Yeah, I would also add that was one reason when it finally did pass that it was made to be very liberal in its application because it was initially very narrowly defined for only AIDS, cancer, I believe multiple sclerosis, and glaucoma. Even epilepsy, Valerie Correll's illness, was somehow dropped in the legislative process. So once it got to Pete Wilson's desk, only those four categories of people would have been affected had Pete Wilson signed it. But he vetoed it. So what as activists, Dennis Perrone, he even said this on the air before the election, you know, it's like we're gonna, you know, maybe there's some that we didn't think of. Maybe they'll find some new applications. We're gonna leave it wide open to whatever the doctor says might be affected. He can prescribe it.
427-3772 is the number to call to jump in on this discussion. We are talking with Kate Horner and Tim Rinker of Santa Cruzans for Sensible Marijuana Policy, and I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides.
And I should actually correct myself. It's recommend, not prescribe.
Right.
It's actually.
So Okay. Do we know what's on the docket in the next year or two in the legislature that could conceivably pass if Arnie, you know, light up a joint with Arnie? Arnie got some play in some areas as being liberal on marijuana. I'm not quite sure where he got that reputation, but somewhere he got that reputation.
Because he's seen smoking a joint.
He has seen smoking a joint. Yeah.
In this film. Iron.
Pumping Iron. Well, you know, that's nice.
After he wins the championship.
Kate?
I was just going to say briefly that I think that there are some people working on a state-level decriminalization bill for certain felony aspects of marijuana.
Yeah, maybe I can do some research, or maybe you can do some research, do a kind of an update in a week or two, and give us a sense of what bills people can actually call in and indeed encourage Assemblyman Laird. And who's our state senator here? Anybody know?
Boxer
is the U.S. senator, but who's the state senator?
Oh, I'm embarrassed. I can't remember.
Neither of us can remember. Well,
I think that might be difficult to do in the next week because they're still hammering out their legislative proposals. But
next couple weeks,
I'll let you know when it comes out.
Okay, and I mean I think the history of this is important, and I think what we're looking at here is a process of through. The Proposition A approach, which is Measure A, as we called it, in Santa Cruz in 1993, and I guess the measure in San Francisco.
92, yeah.
Well, in San Francisco was 92, and here in Santa Cruz was 93, I believe. I might be wrong about that.
But no, it was passed in 92 here.
Was it?
Yeah. It was the year I arrived in Santa Cruz.
Well, I'll have to take your word for it, even though I'm very suspicious of you.
It was with the Clinton election. Because we got a wider margin of votes than Clinton, so we knew it was across party.
Right. So lines. you have this prospect at a statewide level in 2008 of a statewide initiative that would, in essence, are you going to try to do the same thing, make marijuana the lowest priority?
I'm not sure if that's finalized yet. I think there's possibilities. It can go a lot of different ways. I mean, there's basically three different fronts, maybe more. There's MPP's initiative. I think a lot will depend on polling. You know, that's one reason why we did the polling here. We wanted to get the best fit for what people really wanted, and people are in favor of just legalizing it and for industrial and personal, as well as medical use, then we should go with that, you know, if the support is really there. If we feel like, you know, would have much stronger support for just the lowest priority, then, you know, take that step first.
So it hasn't been decided yet?
I don't believe so.
Now, let me ask you about Oakland, and you may not know this, Kate. I keep trying to get some figures on what's been happening in Oakland, because it's been enforced now for 2 years, although, admittedly, they dawdled around with their enforcement committee. But, you know, I heard that one 8 months ago, and presumably now they have a committee. What's going on up in Oakland?
Currently, I don't know what exactly is happening. I do know that it took them a long time, and we learned from some of the mistakes in the text of their initiative. In terms of putting a timeline on the establishing of the committee, but I don't know what exactly is happening.
Right. I've heard the same thing from almost everybody from Santa Cruzans for Sense of Marijuana Policy for the last 8 months. And candidly, I haven't. I mean, the only thing I learned from Oak.
To Mickey Norris.
She was in the studio at one time.
Well, she lives up there.
Yeah, maybe you can find out from her. You always tell me that, but I never learn anything. And you don't either, apparently. So maybe you can let us know.
I don't live in Oakland, so, you know, it's.
Well, Oakland is a very important testing ground for this. I mean, it seems to me that you want to use the experience of Oakland and of Seattle because Oakland may be a very good opportunity for you, but with Ron Dellums up there being the new mayor.
Well, we were able to really effectively use the example of Seattle because they didn't have nearly as much trouble implementing the law. And in the face of some serious opposition, people like the city attorney, Tom Carr, who said basically the same things that our city attorney said after it was passed and implemented, said, well, I was wrong. You know, it seems
to be
working.
Even to get a confession from John Barris or anything wrong, this has got to be this could be a really a monumental event. I'm gonna
I would love to have him have him confess.
You know, well, we have a looks like we have a caller again.
Or
we
caller.
Might have a caller up. Caller, call back 427-3772. I'm kind of I'm relying on my guests briefly, as co-hosts here, so maybe they can. If you see if you see the light blinking, yeah. So it could be that Tim is having auditory and visual hallucinations.
There it goes.
No, I'm having the same hallucinations. Okay, it's free radio. Hi, welcome to the show. What's your name? Hello.
Hello, I'm the same caller that called earlier.
What's your name, caller?
Stephen.
Hey, Stephen, welcome.
Thank you. The state senator Joe Simidian is reachable at 425-0401.
425. Let me quickly see if I can. 425-0401.
Who's a Republican?
425-0401.
Okay, I'm looking for my.
All right.
Simidian is a Republican as well, correct?
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. All right.
Carry on.
Are you at the town clock by any chance? Whoops. Well, I guess we can't get the update on it. If anybody is at the town clock and wants to give a report, I would like to hear it. So please call in. Joe Simidian. Does anybody remember the phone number?
425-0401.
425-0401. Do we know his position on any of these issues, Kate?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah, I don't. I certainly don't know his position. Well. So. Again, I turn my eagle eye down to Santa Cruz and what's happening here. Is there any procedure that we can expect? Are people going to be kind of urged to volunteer for this oversight committee that is going to be coming up? Is it? You call your local council member and say, please put me on? Or do you say, no, please don't put Ed Porter's, elderly stepmother who hates drugs on this particular committee? You know, I mean, how do we lobby around this?
Well, there's an application form that the council is putting together that people will apply for, and we're working with the city council members to ask them to request to appoint people who are supportive of the issue and people who are experts in certain areas, people who have experience as attorneys or as social service workers or in the political world elsewhere.
Have you talked to any council members yourself?
I've had difficulty contacting them, but I'm working on it.
Well, Emily Riley told us at the last council meeting, and I'll be playing this at 7 o'clock, actually, that she would have liked to answer usually she gets 3,000 emails over the vacation when she's mayor. This is her second term as mayor. But on this occasion, the email went down, so she wasn't able to answer any of them. Of course, my reaction was, wouldn't she have noticed this, like maybe 2 or 3 days into it, that she wasn't getting her usual 150, 200 emails a day? And if so, why didn't she simply get a techie in there to help out? And maybe the answer is, who gives a shit what the public thinks? Now I'm sure Emily would take a different stance on this.
You're so cynical, Robert.
You know how it is. You get jaded in this business. So you've tried to reach council members. So far, they haven't called you back, even though we're talking about a deadline that's 100 days beyond the election date, right?
Yeah.
So the election was early November, December, January, February. So we're talking mid-February is really the deadline for this. So, and the sanction for not proceeding properly, I'm not saying they won't, because I think they will, is you have to go to court and get a writ of mandate.
Well, technically, if the police officers are not complying with the measure,
right.
And yes, I suppose the writ of mandate could apply to not appointing the measure, but the committee oversight.
But we think they will. I mean, yeah. There's no reason, because why not? You know, you can appoint them.
That's what they're paid for, right?
I guess, yeah. So, do we have a form in Oakland that has been designed or already on this issue, and that for some reason you were reluctant to put forward that would in essence clarify how many arrests the police are making under what circumstances they're making an arrest? I mean, are they using that kind of a thing up in Oakland? And if you don't have the answer to these questions, just use this as a kind of an impetus at some point to get this information, because I think it's important.
I believe we did, if I remember right, we did have... because we did look at other initiatives that had passed previously. And I believe that was one thing that it had been previously considered.
I guess I'm looking for an update from Oakland. We don't have it here now, so I don't want to belabor the point any further or cudgel you about the head and shoulders anymore for not knowing what's going on up there. Any word from Santa Monica or Santa Barbara about how things are going in those cities, which have also passed similar initiatives, Kate?
Yeah, they have. Not all of them. I think it's Santa Barbara doesn't actually have a citizen oversight committee, so they don't have the burden of appointing one. Hopefully that they will move along.
And the city council.
The police will police themselves in Santa Barbara.
Well, the city council actually is being
called into service to oversee the police department.
They're challenging the law. They're trying to challenge it.
In Santa Barbara?
Yeah, Santa Barbara. I sent you a link to an article.
Really? I'll take a look there.
Yeah, in mid-December, they had a closed-door meeting, actually, which I was going to ask your opinion, because the in the newspaper article, the journalist was speculating that it might violate the Brown Act, the meeting they had. And they had a secret meeting, and they decided to challenge the initiative, basically.
Yeah, from my understanding, they were looking at whether or not it violated the initiative was constitutional or not, but
right.
They decided to go ahead with it,
right.
Looking into what the effects were.
Huh. Yeah, if you want to get good updates on the news, you could connect in with Americans for Safe Access, ASA.
Also, MPP.org, for those who are listening, is another source of information, the Marijuana Policy Project that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, if you get both their emails,
and the,
you'll go a long way towards...
Or go on the web,
staying
check
up
it out.
On the latest news.
Merced County to issue medical marijuana ID ruling following judge's ruling. Here, Santa Barbara meeting behind closed doors is probably what you sent me, perhaps. Last
That's
week,
one of them, yeah.
Santa Barbara City Council voted 4-3 to simultaneously implement Measure P, the POT initiative approved by 2/3 of the city voters in November, and to challenge its constitutionality in court. Many of the council members present expressed keen appreciation for the strong popular support, 66%, received by Measure P, which requires the police department to declare enforcement the lowest priority, but insisted that the entire population was stoned at the time they voted.
I
Just
think
kidding
that
about
what
that.
What Mickey told me the last time I spoke with her is that they were seeking judicial clarification of whether or not the initiative violated the Constitution.
I'm not quite sure why they would do that unless they were critical of it or under strong pressure from the police, or perhaps they are.
I'm sure that they're critical and under pressure from the police. I'm
Probably
just
critical and hypocritical, both.
Maybe they've been talking to John Barisoni.
Well, you know, the city attorneys do talk to each other. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio, Tim, Kate, and Sam. Sam, do you have anything you want to say about this? I know you're a voice from the back.
I have nothing to say about this.
What's happening in Fresno? Are all the pot smokers, is it the lowest priority? Is it the highest priority? What's going on?
In Fresno?
You got to get close to the mic to talk there.
Well, we don't have any clubs in Fresno, so none of my friends have cards or anything, so it's...
You're a bunch of illegal potheads is what you're saying.
Yeah, we're all illegal.
All right, well, I'll keep that in mind next time I see a police officer in Fresno. What's the story out there? Listeners, you want to call in with questions or comments, this could be a big opportunity for you, or perhaps one of the many opportunities, 427-3772. You can if you want. Tim?
I was just going to say, I thought I heard something about a Fresno through one of the ASA alerts recently, but I can't remember exactly what it is.
Kate, what can... People
Might
do.
Be able to Google
what
it.
Can people do in the next few weeks, in the next few months, to, I don't know, assure that the city council follows the law, the police follow the law, that the really what we're looking for, of course, is the restoration of constitutional rights on this issue. Not really. The laws are, of course, their way of entangling us in this thicket and quagmire that we have to get through. Whereas, in fact, most people just want to live their lives without being jailed or having their property seized and or being taken off, having their children taken off to Iraq after being dazzled with recruiter activity on one campus or another. What can we do in the next couple months here in Santa Cruz? What are you going to be encouraging people to do?
Well, I think at this next stage, I'm encouraging supportive community leaders to step up into the role of acting on this oversight committee. So I think that people should speak to activists that they trust in the community to step up and volunteer for these positions, and encouraging their city council members to support responsible appointments.
Have you talked to anybody yourself about people you would want to see on this committee and encourage them to step forward? Are you going to volunteer to be on this oversight committee?
I think that I will volunteer to be on the committee. I think there are a number of other people that have been active in the movement for a long time and have various skills that I think that would be excellent for the committee stepping forward.
Well, again,
how about you, Robert? You want to be on the committee?
If elected, I will serve. If nominated, I will run. I have no idea. I mean, it seems to me to be a rather extensive amount of work for a rather small payoff in a certain sense, because, I mean, you're trying to, what are you trying to get at the local level? You're trying to get the police to honestly follow this measure, which I suppose, I mean, it's good to get information. You might have more punch in getting information from the police, provided you have the funding to do writs of mandate, I think. See, the one thing the Citizens Police Review Board had, it had the power to subpoena police officers, but it never did. It chose never to use it. Now, I mean, again, I don't have any information from any of your other cities as to how effective they are in getting the police to shape up. Except for the figure from Seattle, that there's a reduction of 3/4 in arrests, which is an impressive figure. There's no question about it. You know, so
it's actually 2/3, but yeah,
2/3. You know, so I don't know. I mean, and also there's always the danger of in these committees of playing footsie with the authorities. I found this, for example, the Police Review Board. The Police Review Board became such a largely meaningless appendage, although it had its points too, was that they didn't want to offend the police department. Similar to your group, mm-hmm. that doesn't want to offend the police department in putting this measure on the ballot by actually suggesting, here's a form, guys, this is what you're going to get. No, it's not a bureaucracy. Yes, it's a simple form. This is what we're going to expect you to fill out. Instead, he's saying, we'll let you design it yourselves. You know, and that's how nice we are about this whole thing. In other words, I'm not saying that that's necessarily not going to work, but I think that attitude is not necessarily an appropriate one. I mean, I understand you don't want to necessarily be adversarial to people who might be supportive of your position.
Let me just clarify about that form. It's actually the oversight committee that will establish the form once it's been appointed by the city council, and
right.
the city attorney and the police will have non-voting people sitting at those meetings, but they won't actually be voting members of the committee. So in our defense, it will actually be the appointments of that oversight committee that will be establishing the form as they see fit for this specific community.
Right. Well, I wasn't saying that, you know, the police would be designing the form. I was saying it would seem to me that you should have the form already designed, put it forward, and say, this is what you're going to expect voters, we're going to ask the police to do, whether they like it or not. This is what we're going to be asking them to do. If you want to be, we're not going to sit around
the
and
decision,
wait
the,
a minute. We're not going to spin around and spend our time designing a form. I mean, I'm sorry. That to me is peculiar.
It was based on previous initiatives where
they
did go through and they enumerated what all it was, and they feel like they lost some support because of it, and so it was a decision early
did
on.
Seattle design the their own form? Did Oakland design their own form?
I forget exactly who it was. I mean, there were many discussions.
Okay. I mean, and we're nitpicking here. I think the important thing is, A, you got this passed.
Mm-hmm.
B,
thank you, Santa Cruz.
Thank you, Santa Cruz. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not terribly hopeful based upon simply this passage.
Well, neither am I. That's why I want to get it, you know.
Right. It's no great victory if they're continuing to arrest and jail people at the same level. Now, do we have any indication that the police are stopping their busts or slowing their busts? Do we know any? Do you have any? Because you did get some interesting stats last year that I've never seen before. What was it? 200 and some odd figure. How many arrests were there in in Santa Cruz in the previous year. I guess that figure
a little over 200. I don't have the numbers in front of me.
And I guess the real issue is that number dropping? Or is somebody from your organization monitoring the police department?
Because over the years?
Well, over the months, as this measure passes.
Yeah, those numbers we actually get from the Department of Justice at the state level, which they're required to report annually. And you can get them from the police department, but it takes a long time. So on a month-to-month level, it's a little bit of an energy sink.
Hmm. I don't know. I mean, it seems to me we made a request for the Public Records Act request has to be answered in 10 days. And we made a request with our organization, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for information about how many camping tickets have been made in the last 6 months and what they were. And they gave us a breakdown on 9 pages at a cost of 10 cents a page of the 165 citations they'd given during that period of time. So I don't see why they can't do it with another code section that involves marijuana.
Sure, you could. I mean, we're speaking in minutiae detail here, but the point is that there's a good number of codes that you would have to go through, and it would take a little while, I think.
Hmm. No, possibly.
Yeah, you'd want to talk to Daniel. I forget his last name. He's the guy who was on our committee. He's working with the ACLU, the Drug Policy
Don
Committee.
Zimmerman? No, not Don.
No, Daniel Baer. Yeah.
Well, I'm just concerned that we not have to sit around and wait.
Because he's actually tried to get some information.
I'm concerned we not sit around and wait for a group to be appointed, and then the group that's appointed to get a form, and then the form to be presented to the police.
Well, we'll work on the statewide initiative.
Your group could just as easily walk into the police department with a Public Records Act request and get the material in 10 days. You could demand it in 10 days.
I think we did try and get as much information as we could.
Oh, well,
sure. I mean, we just got it from the state. What's your concern?
My concern is you can get the figures from the state a year later, perhaps, for the previous year, but you can't find out how things have been going since November, how the police are reacting to what you're doing, whether they are, in fact, following the law.
The law, I think, actually didn't go into effect until January.
Whatever.
So
the question, my question... Wait a minute.
Really?
My question is whether the police are responding to this.
We don't know yet. This is the whole point.
Well, the reason you don't know is because you haven't walked up to the police department and gotten figures.
I think some of them are hard to compile at the moment.
You repeated that several times, and I've told you
because
it's a Public Records Act request.
Daniel Baer from the Drug Policy.
It's very easy to get the codes and to make a request. You're right. That's not something that we've needed to do at this particular moment because it's only the 11th of January. That's what we're saying. Is that, yes, that's absolutely within the mandate of the Oversight Committee. It is, however, only the 11th of January. If you would like to know between January 1st and January 11th how many marijuana arrests have been made, certainly you
could
go down
to the police
department.
No, I'd like to know since November how many. In fact, I'd like to know in the last year because I don't think your figures go beyond. Your figures were for, I think, through January 2006 or February 2006, they didn't go very deep into the year, particularly if you got them from the Department of Justice, right? They must have stopped because I think I saw them come out in the summer. So we don't have any figures about what they're doing. And to me, it's important you get this information because if you're not just concerned with this rather narrow legalistic strategy of getting an initiative at the state level, which I think is good if you can do it, but rather with deterring police behavior locally, and using the force of this initiative and the votes that you've got to say to the police department, stop busting people for marijuana, regardless of whether the committee has got the form together or not, and whether the people appointed are willing to do anything on the issue. If you're really concerned about that, then you keep tracking those stats and you keep making them public. And it doesn't take $10,000 studies to do that. It takes people willing to go down to the police department and do it who aren't.
So do you want to do it? Go ahead.
Hey, I have done it.
I mean, really, Robert?
Tim, I've done it in my area of expertise.
You're just being cranky.
Tim, I've done it in my area of expertise, which is to do with homeless stuff. We spent a lot of time getting those figures.
And I'm telling you,
we don't
Daniel
have $10,000 from Lewis.
Member.
And we don't have connections with statewide organizations. And we aren't sitting around
waiting. We did it, Robert.
What did you
You're
do?
Just being argumentative.
What did you do?
We got the figures that we needed from a different place that was much you more got, responsive.
I'm telling you, you should talk to Daniel Baer because he's a representative from our committee who went to the police and tried to get as much information as he could.
You're not responding to what I'm saying. You're not responding to what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that how the police has been acting for the last half year can be tracked, and it can be tracked. If an organization were tracking it, they'd be likely to behave more responsibly and more carefully because of
this.
That's
what the committee's for.
No. That's what you're for. You're throwing responsibility into a committee that is likely to be stacked with people who are hostile or neutral to this whole situation.
Our task was to pass the initiative, and that's what we did.
And that's all you're going to do. Is that right? That's all you're going to do. See, that's my point.
You're faulting
that's
us
my
for that.
Point.
It's
yeah,
like
I am. I am faulting
it's like
you for that.
You'll find anything to...
No. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We disagree. You can smile and you can laugh and you can have all you want about it, but the fact of the matter is there are people in jail because groups are more interested
in
pursuing
Turn it around. Do you think that police arrests of marijuana have increased since the
I don't know.
Since the election.
I don't
do
know.
I'd like you to find out for me. The police have been acted in bad faith.
I'd like you to find out for me. I not have to wait
it's
until
written
June.
Into the law.
Who gives a shit whether it's written into the law, Tim? It's no. The question is what is actually happening, not what is written into the
law.
We're
going to find out.
No, you're not.
When they release the information.
Not necessarily. You're going to wait for them to release the information.
Do you think the committee is not going to work then?
I have no idea. What you're saying. All I know is that you haven't got.
In six months to a year, we're not going to have.
Let's do it one at a time. I'm not saying the committee is not going to work. I'm saying that you have a way and have had a way for the last 6 months of getting information and putting pressure on the police department that you have chosen not to do because you have a limited perspective, and that is simply pass the initiative. Go on to the state level. Pass the initiative. That's your view.
It's untrue because...
Okay, what's untrue about that?
We have tried to get information from the... police department.
Okay.
I told you that Daniel Baer, our representative who works with the drug policy, whatever they're called, from the ACLU, has tried to get as much, and he has gotten as much information as we could from the police department.
Okay, well, then what we need to do is postpone the
And the formation of the committee is to get more.
Postpone the conversation until we can find out what information he got. Because I don't think you did spend a lot of time doing it. Let's get into it. Hi, you're in free radio. In free radio? No, I'm in free radio. Yeah, you're
Robert.
On free radio. Hi.
It's Madison.
Madison, no. Save
my
us.
Phone is echoing back to me, and you guys went offline on the main radio. I don't know if you leaned on a switch or what, because it was getting a little hot there.
Oh,
there you go. You're back on.
Thank you.
So what is the study again? They're going to spend $10,000. I mean, Kirby, the idiot who doesn't know how to manage Jack and, like, lines his own pockets. With the art money, he spent $10,000 on a freaking database.
Yeah, this $10,000 is Robert going back to the old issue of us doing a citywide survey, which we paid $9,000 for, and actually helped a lot in the formation of the wording of the initiative.
Yeah,
he, at that time,
countywide, it seems so obvious. I mean, why bother with the city when all you know? Why didn't you do it county from the get-go?
It was too difficult. Based on
any signatures or canvassing or what was too difficult?
Yeah, the amount of volunteers and the amount of work that needed to be done. We just don't have the supporters.
I got my whole street to sign that thing. It's not that big a deal.
Excuse me? What?
I got my whole. When your person came by, I personally went to several people in my two-block area and said, can you sign this and go to so-and-so, and here's a phone number.
Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't have enough people like you.
I got a sense you guys started like really late on the dime. I got a sense like why wasn't this done months ago? It was like they showed up a few, you know, going, oh, we need it tomorrow, and it's like.
Well, Madison, they did get it done, and it is a much broader project to do it in the county. And I myself was out there getting signatures for this too.
So you have a goal to take it to state level then? Now, just get it on there and just get it as many places.
Yeah, ideally, it would have been harder to pass on a countywide level too. Watsonville's a lot more conservative than Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh. Any questions or comments other than that, Madison?
Well, I've worked down that way. I didn't get a sense they're any more conservative at all, as long as it's presented to Watsonville in the right language. And
I certainly think it could pass down there. We just didn't have the activists down there. We just
the Brown Berets are down in there now.
You know, we don't have the networking and the organization together.
No,
there was a very
passed it in, and there's again Robert's just basically telling us all that there's no one following up but the police department themselves.
No, there's a commission that will be appointed that will follow up. Madison, thanks for your call.
That's right. No,
there,
you cut her off.
I
you don't like her.
Well,
she
no,
calls in too much.
No, I cut her off because I want to continue with the conversation. We're actually 10 minutes over on this segment, and I was going to play something at 7 o'clock that I'm behind on. But no, I mean, the point is that there is a commission that's going to be appointed commission that will at some point be designing a form that will then be giving to the police department. They'll then be turning in the results that will then hopefully be giving information that will demonstrate that the police are following the lowest priority legal requirement that was passed by the voters. That's fine. That's what we found out. Tim has been poo-pooing the idea that this organization should have done anything else because, I mean, in a certain sense, you're quite right. You have your job cut out for you.
I'm saying we did do it.
And you're saying you did do it, we're going to find out later, hopefully, Tim, what exactly got done, and I will be exposed as a cranky curmudgeon who has, is trying to, impugn the motives
of
good people. Right. Kate, anything that we're missing here in this discussion that you'd like the public to know about? Because you guys are welcome to stay, but I've got to roll into a segment about the city council's latest criminal behavior, which unfortunately was done without the benefit of marijuana.
You have some marijuana for us, right?
We'll talk about that later, Tim.
Well, just firstly, because I don't think that it's come up, just a clarification on what exactly the measure does, because I think that the reporting in the Sentinel hasn't been excellent. Just so that everyone is clear, Measure K does not legalize marijuana. It merely changes the enforcement level at which the police will enforce marijuana offenses. So that's really important that everyone...
Call her.
In private for adults. Right.
It's de facto private.
Hi there, caller. You were on free radio. Try again. We'll try and put you on.
And it does cover... It is the lowest law enforcement priority for sales, cultivation, use, all marijuana offenses, which is really important to note as well. And I will say that I think that it's very important that everyone who's working on reform issues recognize that the strategy is obviously to have your eyes on the big picture and to do what you can at the local level, the state level, the federal level, in your community where you can to make incremental gains. And that's what Measure K was. It was an incremental gain that we will take and move forward while we still have our eyes on a bigger picture.
So light one up for Measure K.
Here, here. You're tuned to Free Radio, and we're going to take a caller, and then we're going to turn to the City Council of Santa Cruz. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I have a question for your activist.
Madison.
We had 3 drug-related murders down at our park.
What do you mean, hold it.
To that?
Hold it. Excuse me, Madison.
We asked several people to go do it at their
Madison,
own house.
Madison, do you mean by drug-related, do you mean marijuana-related, or are we talking about something else?
It's drug-related. It's the fall-off from the drug culture. So
What drug culture are we talking about? Marijuana or hard heroin? What are you talking about?
It's mostly marijuana,
marijuana?
We are tired of it.
Okay, now can you specify? Are you actually aware that these were particularly related to marijuana?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
because I've seen them. I actually asked both of these people that are now in for murder more than one occasion to not come down because it's been the riffraff from it is.
Marijuana does not encourage violence.
It's on
our block, buddy.
I will.
They're dead. People are dead. Go into the courtroom number 6 and 7.
Madison, Kate has a comment. Go ahead, Kate.
I was just going to say that I think in situations like this, it's the parallels between alcohol prohibition and drug prohibition are astounding. That when you put drug regulation in the black market, it doesn't go well for young people. It doesn't go well for neighborhoods. I think that we need to think about, obviously, again, like I was saying, more sensible policies in terms of all of drug policies. And of course, it's a tragedy. And Tim, I think being the expert on marijuana effects, I don't think that it's marijuana itself. It's the criminalization of marijuana that creates
exactly.
These.
You know, and
see it, honey.
Well, I think we missed that last comment. But, you know, I don't want to go through the whole, you know, marijuana, good or bad, you know, threat
it's,
or
it's
menace.
Ridiculous. I mean, that's been discounted.
We're not going to, we're going to instead turn
ago.
To city council threat or menace.
That's reefer madness is what that is.
I'm glad you guys came in. You're welcome to hang. And, in fact, I'd like your comments on anything else I'm doing, but... And we will take some more callers on this subject if the calls come in. Regarding the issue of violence around, you know, black market activities, I think that's always a serious matter, you know, and this isn't really related to that. Lowest priority for marijuana use for private use is not, I think, related to that.
No, she was totally off.
Kate, thank you for marching through the cold to come in. It looks like you're trying to make a quick getaway here, or maybe a leisurely getaway. How can people get more information, or can they join up? Are you willing to advise them on how to proceed? Should they call their local? You can call the city council at 420-5020 if you want to apply for a position on this very important commission that will decide on how to make a nice form, and then hopefully we'll hold the police to account to fill out that form.
If people want more information or they'd like to contact me with regards to receiving more information, you can check our website at sensiblesantacruz.org, and there's contact information on there, an email address and a phone number.
Thank you, Kate. We have a caller here. Hi there, caller. Who are you and where are you from? Whoops. Try again if you'd like. 427-3772.
Let it ring more than three times.
Yeah, let it ring, because it looks like we're going to be losing our guests. Hopefully we haven't lost our listeners here. If anybody is down at the clock and has some information about the protest down there, please let me know. I'd like to know how things are going. Are we any volunteers to go surge over there in Iraq? If so, possibly they need some free joints for the trip. Anyway, Tim, thank you for coming in. Kate, thank you for coming in. Any concluding remarks, Tim?
I'll hang around and bug you through
indeed,
your show.
Indeed,
no
cause
problem.
Trouble, you junky dog, you. Okay, well, we're turning now to the Santa Cruz City Council's latest escapades. They had a meeting on Tuesday, and it was actually everything as usual was crammed into the afternoon session so that you, thanks, Kate, so that you. If you had to be there in the afternoon, you couldn't have a job, and so you usually often in the past, you know, issues have been put on in the evening after at the 7 o'clock session. It's usually a 3 o'clock session. In this case, it was a 3:30 session, and a 7 o'clock session. And the only thing on the 7 o'clock session was one long hearing on one zoning issue. So that took up the entire, and actually didn't go too late. The mayor seemingly intentionally crammed the afternoon agenda. And we have rules now that make it difficult to talk for any length of time on more than one item on the, well, or more than two items, let's say, on the consent agenda, and also limit time on the rest of the agenda in the afternoon except for so-called public hearings. Anyway, one item that did come up was an item I pulled from the consent agenda, and we're going to go into that right now.
Number 13, which is the HUD CDBG waiver for pre-incurring costs. Mr. Norse.
Yes, thank you, Councilmember Riley, Mayor Riley. This is an item that is, of course, for a $700,000 shelter program in the ISSP, which actually for the first time would somewhat rationalize the progress of emergency shelter, which is, of course, unfortunately, with or without it, completely inadequate. We have 1,500 to 2,000 homeless a night, and this will be essentially a replacement shelter for the rotating ISSP program. The concern I have is that, and this has been mentioned before, but here it's back with us again, $700,000 is a lot of money to spend for a small number of emergency shelter beds when, in fact, capital improvements are possible to create a campground area. Even federal laws allow this to happen. And that, of course, is not being considered by the city because it has no intention of trying to shelter larger numbers of homeless people
this council believing in the faulty magnet theory, which was disproved by the city council's very own commission to examine the camping ordinance in 1999. I believe that the mayor was in the audience engaging in protests against the sleeping ban at that time when that was being considered. Since then, her position has changed considerably. She now supports the criminalization of the poor at night. So while it's good that 160 people tonight and after the shelter is built for more than $500,000 won't be no more than tonight, but $700,000 later, there will still be 95% of the homeless people out there shivering in weather that is somewhere between, 20 and 40 degrees outside tonight. We're talking about a situation where 45 people have died. Official figures are like 41 or 42, but more names were named when the homeless roster of the dead was read on December 21st. And so it's just something that the city has to address, but of course won't address, apparently until forced to do so either by the courts or by an enraged citizenry, because this council, I'm sure, will simply rubber stamp this measure without adding some kind of proviso, which it should, that what we're really looking for is funding for true emergency shelter for the greatest number of homeless people, not simply for a token few that we can put in, but for the many that are out there. And that is something that the city has always declined to do, at least not entirely. Actually, there was a time when there was a shelter available for a greater number of people. It did have a lot of problems and had a lot of difficulties with it, but no one died during the period of the Coral Street open-air shelter. There was drug use, there was some violence, but people survived. That is not the case, however, this last year in Santa Cruz, and I don't think it will be the case this year with the shelter situation as it is. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Porter?
I think we got Mr. Tomasi.
Oh, Mr. Tomasi. Sorry. Didn't see you.
Mayor Riley, City Council. My name is Mike Tomasi, King of Marijuana. And by the way, you can call me THC if you like. But you know something? These poor homeless people, man, which I happen to be one that I haven't been in about most all of my life. I've always had a place to live. But you know, this town took away my place to live with their meanness and with their ugliness. And you know something? You got to help those 2,000 people, give them a place to stay, even if it's a tent. Give them a place so they can sleep, where they can take a shower, and where they don't freeze to death. Because, you know, that's another thing I know about is being cold and wet and not having any place to go. So why don't we make the point of 2007 the year of compassion and help these poor people and help them get out of that problem, help them get jobs, help them understand what's right and wrong. Because, you know, that's the problem with it. They don't understand what's right and wrong. They need to be taught with compassion, understanding, and evaluating what you're doing before you do it to the people. So give them a break. Let them have a really good time and a good life. And I want to thank the city of Santa Cruz, the city workers of Santa Cruz, all of Santa Cruz, for giving me the most beautiful, the most outrageous Christmas that I've ever had in my life. And believe me, it was the best. And I want to thank the city of Santa Cruz and Mr. Porter, Ms. Riley, Cynthia Matthews, Lynn Robbins, Mr. Coonerty, Mr. Rodkin, Mr. Berzoni, and I never known his name. I can't never remember it. But please believe me, man. We need some compassion in this town, and we need you to help those poor people. Either that or do another thing. Get three big buses, man, and put them on and take them out of your city and put them somewhere where they can live and survive. Because I don't think there's any place in Santa Cruz that can do that. So why don't we make us be the first, like Mr. Ford, our president, who was appointed, not elected, who has the flag at half-mast, that the city of Santa Cruz don't even know what half-mast is. And I think you ought to have a little responsibility on that and make sure the flag gets at half-mast, like our police department, like our courthouse, like the library across the street.
And some may wonder why I'm letting Michael go on the radio as well as he does on the city council. He isn't a homeless man. He has his point of view.
We have corrected that, and that the flag is now.
Mayor Riley speaking.
And we thank you for your comments.
Like I said, the man's incompetent. He didn't know his job.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tomasi. And I'm sure Mr. Bernal thanks you as well.
I would just like to comment that we do have a very vital organization of volunteers.
Councilmember Ed Porter.
To help establish our policies and our actions for homeless matters, that in fact they raise money with a great many events and volunteer actions and telephoning. But I think more importantly, they are helping us to develop a plan. I know that the top priority of that plan is to have a year-round homeless overnight location instead of just the armory that is from November to March. And so I think it would be problematic if we stopped action on this request, just a simple request that we submit a request to HUD for, to allocate, to earmark this money.
This is a so disingenuous a statement by Councilmember Porter on so many levels. First of all, he's avoiding the issue, which is why spend $700,000 on essentially what they're going to do is they're going to outfit the homeless service center with some beds. While currently what the homeless service center does is it sends people out to church floors every night and in the winter to the armory as well. Now, the problem, of course, is the armory is very expensive and the church program is expensive because it requires vehicles. So you might say, well, it's somewhat more cost effective to have some beds, you know, in one place. And yes, as I said in my initial statement there, that's true. But the reality is that if you're only giving shelter during 8 months of the year to 60 of 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people that are outside, or tonight when temperatures are already below freezing outside to less than 160 of that 1,500 to 2,000, then to say you're getting somewhere with $700,000 is preposterous. And the idea also, I mean, it costs a couple hundred thousand dollars a year to run a campground that might serve hundreds of people. And it was actually proposed back in 1996 by some members of the Homeless Community Resource Center. Frank Kucinich, I think his name was. I'm thinking of Kucinich, but there was an official who was working with the homeless services at that time who did propose it. And, you know, even Kennedy, council member at one time, Mayor Kennedy, in the face of massive protests at City Hall that had gone on for 8.5 months, the so-called City Hall Sleepers protest, which you may remember, Tim, because you did some design posters for that. You were present for that. You probably were even cited for being at the Santa Cruz City Sleepers protest.
Yes, I was, yes.
He acknowledges that. $700,000 for getting no more shelter is, well, let's talk about it anyway. But you'll notice Porter doesn't even want to talk about it. What he wants to do instead is say, well, we're conferring with a group of experts and we can't second guess those experts. But he doesn't address the substance of the concern I have, which is why request so much money for so little shelter. He doesn't challenge the fact. He doesn't say, well, because it's a bad idea, we don't really want to shelter that many people, or the argument has been used, these people deserve better than campgrounds. They deserve affordable housing. So until we can get affordable housing, we'll keep arresting them for sleeping outside and not provide campgrounds. I mean, that's the argument that's been used for 25 years in Santa Cruz. It's Rodkin's argument. It's the argument of the progressives. The argument of the conservatives is run the bums out of town. You know, they're just bums. The argument of the progressives is, oh, they're poor homeless people, but all we can really do is, the best thing we can do is to provide the services we have and wait until the national government, you know, allows for more options and more alternatives. Anyway, that was that issue at City Council. It passed, of course, unanimously. And then we move on to an even more nauseating, I don't know what the word would be, repugnant issue. It came up again for another $700,000 grant. This one not even from HUD, but from the voters of this county.
Just in response to the member of the public who said this is not a smart way to spend the money, I think the right way for the city to decide what a smart way to spend our money on homeless matters is to participate with that organization that is helping us make wise decisions about it. So I will move.
And again, just the final comment that he's talking about the $700,000 HUD grant, and again, ignoring the issue of why spend money on $700,000 to increase shelter, not a bit. And he's saying, well, you should go talk to them. Don't talk to us because we rely on what they say. I mean, I suppose it's an argument. It's a strange argument.
Second. Staff recommendation.
Moved by Porter, second by Matthews. Any discussion to the motion? All those in favor, signify
aye.
By saying aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, passes unanimously. Now, moving on, this brings us to the end of our afternoon session of the Redevelopment Agency, which will recess until 7 p.m. this evening for a joint City Council Redevelopment Agency oral communications. However, the City Council is still in session, and we will move on to our administrative business with item number 15, which includes a motion to direct the Director of Parks and Rec and the Chief of Police to work with the City Manager to create the necessary positions needed to implement park security divisions in the Park and Rec and Police Departments. Danette.
And this is Danette Shoemaker, who's I call her the Czarina of the Parks and Rec Department. She was given power to bypass the Parks and Rec Commission last year by this, pretty much the same City Council. There was one member that changed. Robinson replaced Fitzmaurice on the City Council. She had, in the past, she had to go to the Parks and Rec before declaring an area closed at night. Now she can just make unilateral declarations where she informs the Parks and Rec Commission. That was a huge grant of power, and it wasn't clear why they granted it to her, but they did. They also closed, I think, at least four parks to smoking as part of a no-smoking-anywhere-in-public area, which, as a non-smoker, I'm quite happy with that for myself. But in terms of dealing with homeless people who do a lot of smoking...
If they enforced it.
Ranger Wallace enforces it quite vigorously, I'm afraid. Big time. And actually, that's one of the problems, is that this recommendation that's coming up, the 700G recommendation, another $700,000, interestingly enough, is to beef up Parks and Rec police enforcement on so-called illegal activities in the Parks and Rec zone areas, specifically mostly the Poganip and the Greenbelt areas, which has to do, of course, with illegal campers. Where do those 1,500 to 2,000 people go, or those that don't get into the armory tonight, or the shelters? They go and they camp in tents and in sleeping bags, mostly in the Poganip. This is to go after them. And as you were saying a moment ago, Tim, you asked, what about that L.A. Jones decision, the decision that said, you know, you can't arrest people in Skid Row for sleeping at night if they have no legal place to sleep?
Yeah, how about that?
How about that? And the answer, of course, is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals told L.A. back in April, you can't do that. That's improper. Stop doing it. And in essence, the L.A. police have stopped doing it, although, of course, they're using every other law they can think of to go after homeless people. And that's currently, you know, still the struggle is going back and forth. The issue question, your question was, well, isn't that true here? And we're in the 9th District, right? This is the same area. And the answer, it is the same area, but there's no lawsuit pending. Nobody has said, stop John Barisone, stop Mayor Riley, stop Police Chief Scarry from arresting homeless people when there's no place for them to go. And they would have to go to federal court and show that there is no shelter, which isn't that hard to show, and that they're being arrested and cited for crimes that essentially cost you a $90 bail now. Used to be they reduced the fee, but now it's gone up to, it with all the court costs, $90. Plus, of course, we found that Ranger Wallace roams through the Poganip with public works crews shortly behind him, destroying tents, sleeping bags, and homeless gear. And actually, we now have all kinds of citations and have found that Ranger Wallace gives out more tickets and citations, or did in the last 9 months, than the entire Santa Cruz Police Department did for the offenses of sleeping, covering up with blankets, and camping, which is an interesting statistic. Anyway, this same Ranger Wallace is now going to be joined by, I guess it's three more Rangers and three CSOs. I guess that's going to quintuple, sextuple, septuple, I'm not sure, increase by a factor of seven or at least by a factor of four, his the reach of his claw, I should say, of his arm or his hand, if you will. Let's hear the discussion and how this is justified by the City Council.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council. Danette Shoemaker, Parks and Recreation. I'm before you today to describe a program that Police Chief Howard Scarry and City Manager Dick Wilson and I ironed out over the last month or so since the voters approved Measure H. And while the bulk of the money of Measure H is going to improve our streets and roadways, a good portion of it will go towards improving park safety and security and improving some maintenance.
And I pause here briefly because you're going to hear this park safety and security a lot and illegal activity and threats, but you're not going to hear one word of any specifics of how many people have been assaulted or attacked or complained. None of that is going to be available. And yet $700,000 is about to be given away to increase policing of these areas.
I looked at several models before this recommendation that we have today. And we really feel that the best way to address the needs of our community to provide good, safe, well-maintained parks, open space, and riverways is to provide a joint effort, a joint venture between the police department and Parks and Recreation so that we can benefit from the legal abilities of the police department to deal with the law enforcement issues.
That means so we can ticket more campers. You got to get the code right here.
Complement the needs of the communities and address those needs with rangers to deal with resource management, environmental issues. Hopefully, once we get our parks and open spaces in the condition that we're proud of, then work with school groups to do interpretive programs and really invite the community at large back to our parks, open spaces, and waterways. So what we're proposing.
And so the inference here is that somehow the public has fled the Pogonip because of some massive crime or despoiling problem. Now, it is true that there is a significant number of people who camp in a crappy way, leave a lot of waste, and, you know, don't respect the environment. And that's a real problem. I'm not denying that. But the way to deal with it, obviously, is to provide some kind of campground, some kind of classes in how to deal with camping, some kind of incentives, some kind of garbage pickups, restroom facilities, things of that sort, which, of course, this city council is and the police department, of course, and Parks and Rec are in no wise interested in doing. Their solution is to arrest anybody engaging in or drive out, actually, is what they really want to do. They'd rather not even bother to put you in their jails, who are engaging in survival camping, because that's what it is. It's survival camping. Tonight, with freezing temperatures, you've got 1,500 to 2,000 people camping out there. What they're saying is we need more money to guarantee these people get driven away, fined, ticketed, or jailed, made to feel like fugitives and second-class citizens. That, of course, is not the wording that's being used, but that is, in fact, what is being urged without any kind of justification other than the fact that, yes, you have a certain degradation of the environment that's happening that should be stopped, but with no indication or no respect for the fact that that happens at the same time as people are engaging in survival behavior. That is a basic human right and a basic human need.
This is a shell of a proposal because to hire people to be able to implement a program in the spring, we have to get moving right now on the recruitment, especially for the police department personnel because their background checks are so extensive that starting recruitment now We hope to have people on the street April or May. That's our goal.
This is another thing. They're saying they're going to start recruiting these police officers. And if you look at their budget, looking at what they're asking for, they don't tell you how much they're asking for. In fact, a city council member has to kind of, in a nervous way, say, well, how much do you really want? But it's not a part of their proposal. So members of the public who might have opposed this don't know that they're asking for $700,000 out of the measures that was voted by people last year. They thought for roads, highways, and parks improvements. That's what this was. That's what Measure H was about. And law enforcement was also in there, but one of many things. Instead, they're getting a chunk which is about a third of the money. And they're not specifying what they want it for in terms of so much for this police position, so much for this police position, and so on.
Proposing is to hire a police department sergeant and four CSOs that would be assigned to the parks, open spaces, and waterways to complement the work of three rangers that we have budgeted and a chief ranger to supervise those three rangers that will work with the homeless resource officers to bring services or at least make people aware of services that are available to people in our community. So we really see this as a two-pronged effort. The first one is to address any of the illegal activity in our parks and open spaces, get that cleaned up, and then begin rebuilding the community's confidence in using our facilities. And we feel that the two departments work so well together. We used this model several months ago when we were having huge problems at San Lorenzo Park, then Laurel Park, then Rincon Park, then Grant Park, and going full circle. And we had great success pairing police officers with our rangers to make those contacts and to deal with some of the illegal activity. That's our biggest concern. I know that all the council is aware of that. You were present except for Lynn, and I think actually Lynn was in the audience last April when we met at the library and we did the PowerPoint presentation showing you some of the hot spots in the park systems. Well, some of those have improved due to the diligence of our one lone ranger and Public Works and Parks.
Lone ranger is the word. Hi, caller. You got something you want to say?
Hello? Yeah, I do. It's Madison, and I have far more experience in parks than Ms. Shoemaker. I've worked city, county, state, and federal. And at Santa Barbara County Parks, which is a lot bigger department, our park area was like the size of the state of New Jersey that we had to cover. We did extensive research on law enforcement in the park. And the one thing with park rangers is the uniform is green and nobody listens to you. When the uniform is blue, they do. So we came down to it that basically it costs twice as much to have a green cop with a gun than it does just a green, like, CSO walking around. And you can, there is crime, way more, Santa Cruz has more crime than South Central, so I'm laughing at all you peaceniks who don't have a clue what's going on around you. And to raise your children in this crap is ridiculous.
So give me the crime stats, Madison. Give me the crime stats in the parks that show that it's more than South Central.
I don't have the park. Oh, I'm just talking. Yeah, I have the whole city stat, but I don't.
Because I don't. I mean, I can't. It's really hard to believe.
But one thing is that they cost more for these park rangers with the guns, and no one listens to them anyways. That's why a lot of times they end up getting shot. And so that's what we.
Well, you know, you do have these very. You do have these very dangerous campers that are out there. You know, camping in tents that have to be, you know, told to move on. Right, Madison.
It's a rare thing.
No, it's not. There are 265 citations I made copies of today over the last 9 months that Lone Ranger Wallace did himself on his own accord. With these additional forces, they can quintuple that. You know, I mean, I think three of his ranger friends are not going to be working in that kind of beat, but the other CSOs will be, and the sergeant will be.
Yeah, and they have to, with the HUD stuff you had that dovetails into this in terms of homeless, there's these stupid guidelines that they have to adhere to, otherwise they don't get the money. So it's not always the city council's fault. But I'm totally against giving people in green uniforms guns because it doesn't work. They end up getting shot.
Well, instead they're getting CSOs who are going with them. I'm against
it. Yeah, I mean, the number one law enforcement, the highest incidence of law enforcement being hurt is actually the Fish and Game get it. more than anybody else.
Interesting.
Because, again, it's green. People don't listen. They're armed with guns.
Thank you, Madison. And I'm going to continue with this tape so I can get through it by 8 o'clock. You're tuned to Free Radio. It's 101.1, I believe, is our call number, if I'm not mistaken. And it's freakradio.org. Actually, in the studio with me is Sam from Fresno. Sam, you've been saying very little. And also in the studio is Token Tim Rinker. It looks like he's been definitely doing a lot of token. Pretty mellow guy.
I just know. Am I mic two or mic three? Because I'm not sure.
You're Tim. You're not
been
Mike.
Turning me up.
I'm not sure. We're going to turn you up and off if we can. Sam, you come from Fresno, and you're going to be writing some stories, perhaps following the path that Mike Rhodes has blazed in documenting a rather horrendous harassment that the Fresno homeless have been suffering, which people can check out by going to indiebay.org/Central Valley, indiebay.org/Central Valley, and look for a story. Just Google for homeless there. What do you think of what you've been hearing here at the Santa Cruz City Council?
Well, from the City Council, I haven't been hearing much, but you mentioned Mike Rhodes. He is bringing a lot of attention to this issue in Fresno. He was actually the only journalist to sit through the 4 days of hearings recently that they...
And Judge, was it
Wagner?
Wagner.
And he issued a preliminary injunction against the city of Fresno for bulldozing homeless people's property.
Something that Ranger Wallace here says that they do as well here.
Yeah, and actually the FPD, Fresno Police Department officer who is heading this program, is named Ray Wallace.
Yes, so. I noticed that. You know, actually, I should correct this. We don't bulldoze these campsites because we're talking about the Greenbelt Zone, but the equipment is despoiled. The tents are slashed.
Mm-hmm.
The
yeah.
sleeping bags are thrown away. And here are the procedure, according to Ranger Wallace, talking to Human Rights Organization organizer Bob Patton several days ago, by his account, was the sleeping bags and the survival gear. Ranger Wallace comes upon the site. He puts a note, says, "We're going to do this in 3 days. You have 3 days to get out of here and remove all your stuff and go somewhere else," which means nowhere else because it's illegal everywhere in the city to sleep at night or to camp.
That's exactly the same thing that's happening in Fresno.
And then they come back with the public works crew and they destroy
the problems area. Continue. We continue to take tons of garbage out of our open spaces and our green belts.
Please don't interrupt me, Danette Shoemaker. I was trying to make a point here. Actually, that is Danette Shoemaker. I mean, we should listen to what she's saying because she, unfortunately, is the czarina. She does run the Parks and Rec, and her word is pretty much law and a lot of these issues because of the power the council has given to her. Sam, you got something else you want to say about this? Or
about this issue with the parks?
Or about Fresno?
Well, it's just good to bring attention to it. It's similar. It parallels the situation you have with the parks coming through, destroying property, issuing fines. These people, they don't have a legal place to go. And they move them along, and then when they go somewhere else an hour later, the police are there again to move them along further. So it's kind of like a cycle.
Have you seen any of this yourself, or have you just read about it?
I've been reading a lot about it, yeah.
And you haven't seen it. You haven't witnessed it.
Seen photos, videos, but I haven't been downtown to witness it. It all happened within November, December, past 3 months. It's been happening.
Now, you're originally from Santa Cruz, right?
No, I spent some time doing some schooling here, but I'm from Fresno.
And you came back to Santa Cruz to kind of check things out on the old school ground?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And what's your impression of the city? Has it gotten worse, better? Do you have any sense how it compares?
Well, since I was just here this summer, it hasn't changed that much. Mm-hmm. I still see the same people along Pacific, but I'm making new friends this week. So
just don't sleep out tonight, okay?
Well,
otherwise, I may have to. if we don't call the police, we'll call emergency services. Tim,
I was pointing to the.
We have a telephone call. I'm afraid.
I've had a sleeping bag taken up in the Poconet.
Oh, come. I can't believe that. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Company.
Ask him the stats for deaths of homeless in Fresno year to year if he knows them.
Do you know those stats?
They're having a massive increase like we are.
The stats for death. Deaths
I think all cities are.
Deaths of homeless in Fresno.
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
No, I don't know, Madison. Thanks, though.
Too many.
Here we go with more of Danette Shoemaker. And again, when you despoil people's tents in freezing weather, you're making it more likely that they're going to get ill and die or suffer complications that could lead to that kind of condition.
Bicycles, 5-gallon containers of used needles and syringes, human waste. Those are not the kinds of materials that we want our public to encounter when they're using our parks and open spaces. So what we're...
You had a comment, Sam?
Well, that's the same argument about the unsanitary conditions of some of these homeless areas that they've been using in Fresno. And we have certain community officials, reverends, who walk through these encampments, and they find that it's not nearly as bad as some of the officials are claiming it to be. Needles are not, you know, strewn all over the floor. It's not unsanitary. There isn't feces everywhere. It's a lot... At least in Fresno. I'm not sure about San Diego.
Right. Well, there are some nasty camps here. It's true. But, I mean, you know.
It's easy to exaggerate it for political purposes.
Indeed.
That you direct the police chief and myself to continue to work with Dick Wilson, the HR director, and the finance director to create these positions that will work within the framework of about $700,000 is what we're anticipating will be available for park security, safety, and maintenance in the city of Santa Cruz so that we can develop a program so that we can begin the recruitment, identify the proper equipment, vehicles, training, whatever we need to put these people on the street so that they can begin working for all of us and give the voters what they asked us to by passing Measure H. If all goes well, we should have at least the beginnings of the program, as I said, in early spring, and hopefully a full complement of individuals out in our parks by early summer. So I'm here to answer questions. Howard Scarry is also here if you have specific questions.
Thank you, Howard Scarry, is a police chief. Yet another reason to be grateful to the voters who passed Measure H.
Emily Riley.
Any questions? Thank you.
Lynn. Just the only one. Are you anticipating this, the efforts that you have going forward with the other department heads, as using almost all the resource, the $700,000?
The initial rough figures seem that we will use just about all that. By the time we buy materials, vehicles, provide training, uniforms, all of that, yes.
Okay.
But that's not all the income from Measure H.
That's just the small portion of that quarter percent that goes to that.
Right. Any other questions for Danette? Any questions for Chief Scarry?
Oh, one other piece is some citizens have asked, well, if the police department beefs up their staff, you know, how are we going to know that they're going to be in our parks and our open spaces? And that's the commitment of the police chief and the deputy chiefs, that the sergeant and the CSOs will be assigned to the parks. And, in fact, the recruitment for the CSO, say CSO/parks, and really highlight the qualities and the responsibilities that we're looking for that separate or explain the difference between existing CSOs and the CSOs that will be assigned to parks. So this is really a targeted recruitment specifically for Parks and Rec.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay. Would anyone from the public like to address us on this item? Come forward to the microphone. Hi.
Absolutely. Welcome, Council, especially welcome Lynn Robinson, a new member, and perhaps a fresh voice to the Council.
Thank you.
Direction.
This is Jan Golder.
I'm very familiar with this situation, and I was very glad that the City Council had that joint session back last April, but I'm going to ask that in this urban parklands renewal strategy, that you look very closely at what's actually being accomplished here for the money. We had on page 4, staff supports of the previous report, staff supports a large-scale, long-term, comprehensive strategy to bring public spaces to a clean and safe standard. On page 5, they recommend close examination of other city policies and practices that affect...
And the
Okay.
The comments being made by Yon Golder, who is a one-time homeless man, now a property owner, don't use the H word, the homeless word. As you will find,
drive
nor
out.
Nor does Danette Shoemaker, nor does any city council member, even though they will be feeling the major impact of all these policies.
Survey,
his concerns have to do with the lack of sports fields there, and that, that there be more facilities
don't
in the Greenbelt.
Don't have these problems in Lighthouse Field and the more developed parks where there's active uses by people. Why don't we have any feedback from the professional planner, Sue Harris, about this? The other thing, has the need been quantified? Will the effect of the increased magnitude be measurable? I've been asking for 3 years for the actual maps and cleanup reports from Parks and Recreation.
And, of course, that would be good to have, those kinds of stats and figures. Numbers of illegal activities, what's the need for all this policing, what impact is it going to have on the homeless community, and I raise these issues in my own comments, which follow shortly.
A very important question, will any ranger positions be fully certified police officers? Back in 98 or 99, they cut that certification to save $2,000, and you're spending $30,000 a year to clean it up now. Has any cost comparison been made between making the peace rangers fully certified, able to enforce state law, and be able to do custodial arrest versus the option of having a police community officer hold their hand in the park, have to go out like that? $30,000 in cleanup year. Why isn't this cost coming from the users that actually use the Greenbelt like it does for sports facilities? If PNR can charge $100 an hour for the use of a sports facility plus $1 an hour for parking, why can't there be a user fee of say, $100 a year for the people that are out there in the Greenbelt to help offset these costs? Why do we have to pass a general sales tax? I contend, and I intend to prove someday when we get down to the budget, that the Greenbelt use is the most expensive, the most subsidized, and the most problematic recreational use that this city has.
Thank you very
much.
They
can't even put toilets
comment.
Or trash cans out there. They need to look at it, a much closer look, and a much more effective use. And I'd
Thank
be
you.
Glad to help do that.
And, of course, there was no hearing on this particular proposal through Parks and Rec, and this appeared on not the consent agenda, but the administrative agenda of an afternoon city council meeting with 72-hour notice. So $700,000, gone like that.
Next speaker.
Since this, are we representing an organization? I request permission to speak for 5 minutes. Be speaking for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Actually, had you asked in ahead of time, I would have done that. But from the microphone, I'm not going to do that, but you're welcome to speak.
Sorry to hear that.
Minutes.
I think that I'm the only other speaker, but I'll go ahead. I'm a little tired of hearing about this rhetoric of safety and security. We're at war in Iraq because of national security concerns. The parking garages were closed last year to the public except for 15 minutes and completely to the homeless, even any pedestrian walking by, even out of the rain, out of security concerns. But we have no stats from the police chief. We have no stats from Danette Shoemaker about the security problems. What is the illegal activity? We're primarily talking about drug war stuff, which is not curable by this kind of approach, and illegal camping, which is the attempt of poor and homeless people to find the shelter that this council refuses to provide. I'm not saying you have the money to do it, but they have to do it. It is a necessity to sleep to survive. This kind of procedure that is being used by Ranger Wallace, whom you have lauded to the skies last year in this council, is completely abusive of the rights of poor and homeless people and their needs, their security and safety. Now, an attempt to get information for Public Records Act requests has revealed that the police department last year, between April and November, issued about 230 citations for camping and sleeping in the entire city. Guess who issued more on his own? Ranger Wallace went alone and began harassing campsite after campsite, destroying not just garbage when there's no garbage can, so how can people dispose of their own garbage? But destroying people's sleeping bags and blankets, the same kind of material that's given out by charities so people can stop freezing, gets ripped apart by this eager beaver ranger and apparently the new people that you will appoint in his stead to go down there. I want to remind you that not only is there a Jones decision in Los Angeles that makes it illegal to criminalize people after dark who are trying to sleep when you have no shelter, there's also a Fresno court decision, the Kincaid decision, that eliminates the possibility of parks and rec departments and police departments destroying homeless property. They have to store it. Wallace admitted to us he did not do that. This is the policy that you are, in essence, justifying and supporting when you are pushing for this. Now, also, the whole procedure you're using, this is an afternoon session. We've had 72-hour notice of this. It hasn't gone before a Parks and Rec Commission. Danette spoke to me about this earlier. It is a completely done deal behind closed doors where the police chief and the czarina of Parks and Rec get together and make a decision, and you guys rubber stamp it. $700,000 decision that does not provide any facilities for the people that you are going to be criminalizing. I think it's fiscally unwise. I ask this recommendation be amended to include homeless and real social server input, an honest and clear estimate of costs, a realistic assessment of the legal problems under the Jones-Kincaid decision, and perhaps even a real public process involving Parks and Rec hearing with adequate public notice.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your comments. Mr. Coonerty? Oh, sorry.
Mayor Riley, City Council.
And this is Michael Tomasi. Unfortunately, we don't have time to hear him, but I will be back on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning, actually a little earlier. I'm going to be breaking in, probably joining Thomas Levitt, who will be going back to the 1996 City Hall Sleepers protest to interview Larry Hilliard, attorney at law, who was one of the attorneys who fought an attempt by then-Mayor Rotkin to get an injunction against the entire protest. Do you remember those days, Tim?
Yeah. I wanted to say kudos to Joe Schultz for his comments in the this week's cover story of the Metro on his fair treatment of the homeless and his soup given out to the homeless over the years.
Yeah, Joe has been providing food. Serves as a stopgap to even organizations downtown, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, which feeds people and plays for people and invites people to join and take back public space every, well, it and Humanity for Homeless do it every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in front of New Leaf Market between 6 and 8. So if you want to go down there on Pacific Avenue and join, check it out. This has been Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm about to exit the studio because we'll soon be hopefully hearing the melodious tunes of Uncle Dennis, who will be taking us from the cream to the dregs, or vice versa, shortly. We're going to go out on a little music from,
that sounds like him now.
I think he's arrived in the studio, but let's begin some music, and he can conclude it. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and thank you, Tim Rinker, and thank you, Sam.
Take the side of freedom, know your enemy. It ain't hard to do, they speak on our TV. They own the radio, they own the magazine. As they make the world sick with their disease. Well, they're selling promises to the working man, who's signing contracts that he don't understand. They got him tied down, working overtime, hoping that the ends will meet somewhere down the line. Somewhere down the line we're gonna have to make a stand. Hard rain's gonna wash away the blood upon the land. Where the tears are falling now, a raging sea will flow, singing the most perfect song the world did ever know. We'll be right back.
policeman still arresting anyone who's making noise. Enjoy your freedom, but just don't raise your voice. Live your life in silence, work till you're 65. Always chasing dreams that you will never realize. You're working for the dollar that they'll just take away and line their pockets with the money that you save. As the market crumbles, they're still getting fat. Go watch a movie and forget about that. Blood upon the land, where the tears have fallen down, raging seal flow, singing the most perfect song the world did ever know, singing the most perfect song the world did ever know.
Without a doubt, they're real.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at a frequency of 101.1 megahertz on the FM dial in the northern Monterey Bay area. And we're also available on the web, streaming live at www.freakradio.org and at radio.indymedia.org. I'm Uncle Dennis, and we are going to explore the rock and roll of the 60s and 70s tonight right here on From the Cream to the Dregs. Stay tuned for that. We'll have the Brew of the Week coming up very shortly in about 20 minutes or so. And then at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And at 10 o'clock, we'll spotlight a group. Not sure who it is yet, but we'll figure out who's going to be our spotlight group for tonight. And that's where we're going to play a whole bunch of their music. We're going to get a little history lesson about the group and the members of the group and stuff like that. And, of course, stay tuned for all of that right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. So let's play another one by Iron Butterfly.
Are you happy?
I wanna tell you I love you.